Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Next to a man who has just retired as the longest serving newspaper editor in these islands. It's been a journalism career that has spanned some of the worst atrocities of the Troubles. While as editor, he charted his paper through the ceasefire, decommissioning, devolution and Brexit, of course. Noel Doran left his role as editor of the Irish News based in Belfast just last week, and he joins me on the line now. Hello, Noel.
Morning, Claire.
Lovely to talk to you. I want to go back to your early days as a journalist, because you were working within your own community. You were involved in the GAA scene, but you were confronted by, you know, let's put no bones in it, horror and misery, you know, that your people, your friends, your neighbours were dealing with every day. What was that like for you, reporting on that when it was right in your midst?
It's a huge issue to have to deal with along the way. There were essentially two stages to my career, as you say, the reporting aspect of it when I was out in the field, and more recently in the last 25 years as editor of the Irish News. But you're quite right. When I first came into journalism, those were very difficult times, starting in the late 70s and through the 80s. Some dreadful events, some appalling events perpetrated on all sides. And, you know, some of it was very close to home to me, coming from a GA background in South Down. I did see many terrible events along the way on all sides, and that does shape you. It does influence your views on issues like legacy and the need for partnership and government today, and you carry it with you over the years.
Mm-hmm. I know many people listening to this will remember Gordon and Joan Wilson, and their daughter was killed in the Enniskillen bomb in 1987. Indeed, I remember it myself as a child, watching them on the news at that time and their extraordinary response to her death. You believe what they had to say at that time, that it started and shaped the conversation around peace and reconciliation?
It most definitely did. Back in 1987, I was a reporter for the Belfast Telegraph and found myself sent down to Enniskillen in the immediate aftermath of the terrible explosion. And I went to the house of Gordon and Joan Wilson, and as you say, quite extraordinary. They had just lost their daughter, Marie, in traumatic circumstances during the Poppy Day explosion. And yet, Joan Wilson was prepared to bring a reporter who turned up on her door, like myself, into the house and introduced me to Gordon, who spoke to a number of journalists on the day, and said he didn't just forgive the people who'd killed his daughter. He wanted to work for peace. He wanted to work for reconciliation. And he wanted to create a better future so there wouldn't be explosions and murders of that kind going into the future. And it did have a massive impact. He ended up in the Senate in Dublin, but he was a name who became known around the world for the generosity of his spirit. And it did help to change the agenda. It did help to move on how people regarded the consequences of violence. And I think it has had a wider significance. And I think it shows that journalism has a role to play, politics has a role to play, but the Christian sentiment of forgiveness and reconciliation mm-hmm. has to be very close to the heart of the matter as well.
And then in 1988, and you mentioned this, I know, to Freya McClements in the Irish Times interview that you did, you reported on the murder of Jack Keelty, Patrick Keelty's dad. And that seemed to profoundly affect you.
Yes, because it was quite close to home for me in South Down, and it was a terrible case where one of the most prominent people in a very small village was singled out for assassination for no reason other than his religion and his business background. But of course, it turned out that Jack Keelty was the father of Patrick Keelty, still at school, and you know, we've watched Patrick's career develop since then. I've got to know him a little bit along the way. I think he's made a major contribution. And to see him, you know, as at the head of the St. Patrick's Day parade, fronting the Late Late Show, but also making a wider contribution to the debate, despite those terrible circumstances that he had to deal with as a schoolboy back in 1988. It gives you great hope. But I was there just after his father was assassinated. I could see the despair on the streets of the small village of Dundrum, which I knew well. And the way that he's been able to transform his life and to make a contribution to the wider debate, I think is very striking indeed.
Mm-hmm. And we're all very proud of him here too, and the work that he's doing. Now, Noel, like the work that you were doing at that time, right throughout your career, it could lead you into some pretty dangerous situations. I mean, you were in Milltown, weren't you, in the cemetery, when Michael Stone went on his shooting spree during the IRA funerals. And that was when he killed three people on that day. That was a very dangerous situation.
It was an astonishing day, Claire. This was a time of enormous upheaval when people were actively talking about the possibility of civil war breaking out. We had the Gibraltar killings, we had shootings, bombings right across the north. And when those Gibraltar victims came home to be buried, Michael Stone, as a loyalist activist, did indeed launch an attack on the funeral cortege in Milltown Cemetery with thousands of people present. And I was there, and the grenades started landing beside us, and the shooting started. And there was a time of enormous panic and fear. There was clearly some sort of a chase going on. There were people dropping with their injuries. And in the middle of all that, there was some confusion when as it came to an end after he was apprehended. There were confused scenes, and a small number of people turned on journalists and thought that possibly I was something to do with Michael Stone, and I took a few thumps and a few kicks before I was able to persuade them that I was a journalist. And one of the main stewards recognised me, and I was able to extract myself from what could have been a very difficult set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. But there were three people killed. There were over 50 people needed hospital treatment. It was a horrifying experience to see the injured being put in the back of hearses to be being taken to hospitals because there was no other way to get them there. And it shows you when things get to that stage, you know, just the despair, the grief, the appalling circumstances that you have to deal with. And it's just such an enormous relief that politically and in wider terms, events have moved on so dramatically since those terrible days.
Did you ever question around that time, what am I doing in the middle of all of this?
Yes, frequently. I suppose, like everybody else, you know, I'm getting married, I have young children. Should they be brought up in this society? But things were turning round, and you know, as I moved to the Irish News in 1993, they were still very difficult times. You know, with the Shankill bombing, we had Greysteel, with a sense that the community was almost falling apart. But there were political talks going on in the background, and as they developed over a period of time, the Irish News and the newsletter and the business community and the trade union community came together for a number of events to support that process. And it helped to create a climate in which events were able to move on. And ultimately, the Good Friday Agreement, which has been so transformational, was signed in 1998.
Mm-hmm. And you have witnessed the evolution of some of the main players in the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, most notably, Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness, you know, right from the beginning almost of their careers through to that point that you've just mentioned, the signing of the agreement.
That's correct. I mean, I knew Ian Paisley when I started as a weekly newspaper journalist in Antrim and Ballymena, and you could say a lot about Ian Paisley, but he always dealt with the local press, and he made himself accessible, and he was a huge figure in his area. But as you say, later on, then I came to know Martin McGuinness when I went to work in Derry. The two dominant figures there were John Hume and Martin McGuinness. John Hume, almost an international figure at that stage, but Martin McGuinness starting to become more prominent. I first met him in the middle of a riot, and we just got to know each other. And then, you know, I had occasion to call to his house on a number of occasions, once after he'd just been released from custody. And then when you meet up with him at Stormont and at in Dublin and at political gatherings many, many years later when he's first minister, you do have a bit more of an understanding. And together with Hume, McGuinness played a central role in moving society forward. There'll always be controversy surrounding Martin McGuinness. There's quite a debate going on at the moment about his history and about his track record.
Yeah.
But I think it has to be said that without Martin McGuinness, much of the progress, and John Hume and David Trimble, much of the progress of the last 25 years would not have been possible.
Yeah, you know, we forget sometimes, don't we, just how fraught that whole time was coming up to the Good Friday Agreement and afterwards too. I mean, when it came to those big questions around that moment, the Irish News didn't shirk away from taking a position.
a very strong position, which was that we were in support of constitutional nationalism, and we always had been, but we wanted to extend the hand of friendship to all sections of society. We wanted to stress that violence created only grief and bitterness and long-term turmoil, and there always had to be political options, which turned out to be the case. We also had to play a role in supporting the new policing structures, because policing went to the heart of our discussions and our debate, and without proper nationalist input into policing, the new dispensation probably could not have worked. Now, it was difficult at the time, particularly with the GAA's Rule 21 ban on members of the British Army and police force being allowed to take up membership of the police, but that changed over a period of time, and it really has been quite dramatic when you see Jarlath Burns coming in as the new GAA president from South Armagh, and the role that he's playing in terms of the peace and reconciliation process, and encouraging gestures to all sections of society over policing, over politics, and the GAA is playing its full role there in a very constructive way. It was very difficult. It was very different in the immediate aftermath of the Good Friday Agreement, but those were changes which probably had to happen, and papers like the Irish News had a role to play to a certain extent in shaping the debate.
Well, Noel, it's a great pleasure to talk to you, and I hope now that you're a little less busy that we might be able to talk to you more often about some of these issues that come along. That's Noel Doran there, who is former editor now of the Irish News. Coming up next, we're going to speak to our reporter John Cook, who's attending the inquest of Aoife Johnston.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.